Good afternoon, KTOO listeners. It's almost 3 p.m. It's time for another edition of the Juno Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix, and I'm filling in for Joan Pardes today. On today's show, we'll talk with Lindsay Hurlburt about Saturday's Auk Bay Co-op Preschool Harvest Festival. Heather Hardcastle will be here to highlight Friday's Transboundary Rivers Forum. Jeremy Shea will talk with us about how Alaska picks its judges. Some Juno Roller Girls will be by to talk about Saturday's Nightmare on Egan Street event. And we'll talk with the organizers of the Charter School's Fall Carnival, also coming up this Saturday. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and lots more for Wednesday, October 22nd, 2014. Stay with us. National Native News is coming up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez in Anchorage, Alaska. Get Out the Native Vote efforts are being discussed at the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage. A voting video premiered this week, produced by the First Alaskans Institute, which puts on the conference.
I'm turning out to vote for Native rights.
I'm a Darug, and I'm turning out to vote for subsistence hunting and fishing rights.
First Alaskans Institute President Liz Medicine Crow says the video encourages early voting. She says this year there are 128 new early voting sites in rural Alaska.
In rural Alaska, with the cycles of our life and our way of life in terms of hunting, fishing, and gathering, we're busy all the time. That makes it more challenging for us to make a date like November 4th, which is the general election date. So early voting opened on October 20th. And you can vote all the way through in early voting through November 4th. So you have now an additional 14 days to have your voice heard.
Participants over 18 were challenged to go vote, and younger people were asked to encourage a family member. All attendees can cast a conference ballot, which demonstrates the voting process. Medicine Crow says everyone has a voice.
When we turn out to vote, we're forcing the system to include our voices, and the more power that we have within the system, the more power we have to change the system. We want our young people to be prepared for that moment when they turn 18, and the first thing they're excited to do is vote.
Ballots will be counted and results reported. Members of the Tanana 4-H group stood up Tuesday and called on elders to recognize and do something about issues like sexual abuse and drugs. 15-year-old Linda asked people to vote against a ballot initiative to decriminalize marijuana in the state.
Right now, we can't fill jobs because of having marijuana in our systems. Imagine what this will lead to our workforce. Imagine the high cost of medical and education that will follow the legalization of marijuana. I beg of you to protect our children and our loved ones by voting no on ballot measure 2.
The Elders and Youth Conference ends today. U.S. Senator John Tester, chair of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, recently met with Minnesota tribes and at the same time campaigned for Senator Al Franken. Melissa Townsend reports.
Minnesota is home to 4 Dakota communities and 7 Ojibwe tribes. On Sunday, Senator Tester visited the Red Lake Nation and the White Earth Reservation, the 2 most populous Ojibwe tribes in the state. Senator Franken joined him for this leg of the trip.
Al sits on the Indian Affairs Committee, and he's a great asset because he brings this Minnesota perspective.
Franken won his Senate seat in 2010 in an extremely tight race that ended in a 9-month-long recount effort. In that election, he won the majority of the votes in the precincts that include the Red Lake and White Earth reservations. Lorna Legue with the White Earth Tribal Government says there is a widespread support for Franken again this year.
When he came to visit, we had a list of issues that we addressed with him, and he was fully aware of those issues. He has always been a good advocate for White Earth.
White Earth Tribal Chairwoman Irma Visner has even endorsed him. Franken says that's why he wants to get out the tribal vote.
I've worked so hard on behalf of our tribes that, you know, I probably will be getting a large majority of the vote from Indian country, and that's why we're trying to encourage people to turn out.
White Earth's Lorna Legue says she's working hard to make that happen. I'm Melissa Townsend.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. and by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian Country and the world. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Science, technology, engineering, and math students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, undergrad research opportunities. New Mexico Tech, where the smart kids go. Info in Winds of Change magazine or visit nmt.edu. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Our first guest today is going to be Lindsay Herbert, and she's going to be talking about Ok-Bay Co-op's Preschool Harvest Festival. And I'd like to welcome her to the show. Hi, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, doing fine. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Co-op Harvest Festival.
Yeah, absolutely. This is our first year that we've opened this up to be a community event. So we're looking forward to having lots of new faces there. Our event is on Saturday, October 25th. That's the Saturday, and it's from 5 to 7 p.m. And it's located at the LDS Church, which is in Lemon Creek, right across from Western Auto. And we were so lucky to have that space donated to us by an alumni family. And we're very excited to be there. Our entrance fee is going to be $5 per kid or $15 per family. And that's as many people as in your family. It's A-okay, $15. And it's definitely an all ages kind of event. We have this geared from, you know, very young to some of the older kids. Non-scary, lots of fun. And we have so many activities and games available there. The things that you can pay for while you're there, there'll be a $5 fee to have your portrait done, and that's donated by Jennifer Walker, who's with Barefoot Walker Photography. She has volunteered to be there to take portraits for people, and those prints will be available from her online, so you can order those. And then we will also have a bouncy house, which was donated by a family, and that's $1 per turn. And then my co-teacher's daughter and some of her friends will be doing some face painting. They've been practicing for a long time, and that will be $1 per child for face paint. And some of the activities we have, our highlights are a cupcake walk. It's like your traditional cakewalk where all the kids walk around and the number gets called when the music stops. But because we're working with younger kids, we know that it's hard to have winners and losers. So everybody gets a treat at the end. One large cupcake for the winner and one mini cupcake for everyone else. So we've been hard at work making mini cupcakes all week. We also have a trick-or-treat lane, which has been a big hit in the past. We have lots of boxes set up to look like a little neighborhood, and the kids can walk down and knock on the doors, and there'll be someone inside, open up the door and give them a little treat. We have monster bowling. We have a beanbag toss. We have macaroni necklaces, bag decoration, witch hat ring toss. We have a cornhole board, lots of things. And there are treats or candies available with each turn at these events. And we do have gluten and nut-free options. We have non-candy options for treats as well. We know that there's a lot of that that's available at this time, so we're trying to go a little bit on the healthy side as well. And all the proceeds from this are going to benefit our preschool, Ok-Bay Co-op Preschool, and we do still have some openings in our classes, and so that's for kids from 3 to 5, and you can visit our website, okbaycoopreschool.org, to find out more about that.
All right, Lindsay, it all sounds like a very worthwhile event for people to attend, and not very expensive either.
No, that we were hoping that we could reach out to some community families and get everybody in. It's definitely something that kids from young to old, we hope, will be interested in.
And before we went on the air, you said you were the one that's baking the mini cupcakes.
I have been.
All right. How many have you got?
Well, so far we have near 300. I have learned how to delegate, and so we also have a few other moms who are making some of the fancier ones and some of the large ones. But I have made just about 300 mini cupcakes this week, with more to come.
All right. Are there going to be any attending vendors or anything for refreshments or anything like that? Or
we will have some snacks and things available. And okay. But all the work that's been done has been preschool families. So all of our families have stepped up to help run the activities. They're making cupcakes. They're helping with the setup and the takedown. And we will have snacks and some waters and things available.
Okay, sounds outstanding. And remind everybody where it's going to be on Saturday.
It's at 5100 Glacier Highway, which is the LDS Church, and it's across from Western Auto.
All right. Thank you very much, Lindsay Herbert, for being our first guest on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's early morning, not quite four. The farmer's up and out the door. On little farms all through the state, they're loading bushel, box and crate. And while you're sleeping safe and sound, the farmer's driving to your town, bringing fresh grown, fresh picked food your way as the sun wakes up the day. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good. And in the park, some local gents set up the tables and some tents. The little trucks come rolling in, and soon the market can begin. Flowers straight from the flower bed, some fragrant, still warm bread, fruits and veggies of every shape and size, and delicious home-baked pies. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's farmer's market. Good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. The market changes every week, depending what crop's at its peak. First is rhubarb, lettuce, peas, then spinach and strawberries. The local peaches are so nice, and watermelon by the slice. Heirloom tomatoes, corn so tall, and apples in the fall. Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. So if it's still a bit too hard to try and till your whole backyard, there is a place right down the street where all your savvy neighbors meet. Like the seeds that the farmers sow, your whole community will grow. 'Cause beside all the best that the farmer sends, you'll find a brand new crop of friends. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's farmer's market. Farmer's market. Good for the farmer, good for your family. Farmer's market good.
Okay, that was the farmer's market song off the album Give Peas a Chance. Okay, that works for me, I guess. All right, now Jeremy Shea is in here. He's going to talk about how Alaska picks its judges. And I'd like to welcome him to the show. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Ken.
All right, let's talk a little bit how we do that here.
Okay, well, actually, we're doing a show in our 2VU studio for 360 North. It's another taping of Forum at 360. Tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock in our studio here at K2, the TV studio, which we call at 360. It's pretty snazzy. Matt Miller, who a lot of people know from Wake Up to him in the morning doing the news during Morning Edition, he's hosting. And our guest is Walter Carpinetti, retired Supreme Court Justice for the Alaska Supreme Court. And So kind of the news peg on this, or the thing that makes it sort of relevant now, is on Election Day, November 4th, we as voters, Alaska voters, decide which state judges get to keep their jobs or which ones don't. It's called judicial retention. And this stuff is all written out in the state constitution. Carpinetti is a pretty good expert on this. He used to serve on a body that makes the recommendations to voters on which judges should be hung on to and which ones shouldn't be. And there's been some efforts recently to politicize that process. So it should be kind of interesting talk on, like, why do we use this system? It's pretty unusual compared to a lot of other states.
Right. Some places they're elected pretty much for life.
Right.
And in others they run for fixed terms.
Yeah. So we have a kind of different system here where a panel of lawyers selected by the Alaska Bar Association and three public members appointed by the governor form this judicial council, and they make decisions, collectively. So, that's an election issue, and so we're taping this show on Thursday. Doors open at 6:45 p.m. Audience is welcome to come in and encouraged to come in, actually, and you can bring questions, too, and we'll put you on TV and let you ask the justice those questions yourself.
All right, Jeremy Shea, thanks for being our guest on the show, and anybody that's interested, show up for the taping.
Thanks.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 22nd of October, 2014. It was on this date, 1879, Thomas Edison tested the first successful electric light bulb at his laboratory in Menlo Park, New Jersey. Electric lights already existed, but they were too bright to be used inside the home, so people used gas lights instead. He knew he was going to have to design some kind of a bulb, and the question was, what would the filament be made of? He needed something that would glow when it was heated with electricity, but it wouldn't burn up too quickly. And he tested thousands of different materials. He tried platinum, but platinum was too expensive. He tried a carbonized cotton fiber, which worked for about 14 and a half hours. And eventually he used bamboo fiber, which lasted for 1,200 hours. Somebody asked Edison how he was able to persist despite those thousands of failures. And he said, "I have not failed. I have succeeded in proving that those thousands of ways will not work. And when I have eliminated the ways that will not work, I will find the way that will work." It's the birthday of John Reed, Portland, Oregon, 1887, best known for the book 10 Days That Shook the World about the Russian Revolution of 1917. It's the birthday of the columnist John Gould, born in Brighton, Massachusetts, 1908. He lived in Lisbon Falls, Maine, and for more than 60 years, starting in 1942, he wrote a weekly column for the Christian Science Monitor about what he saw in Lisbon Falls, Maine, and on the farm where his great-grandfather had homesteaded, where he had settled with his family. And it's the birthday of Doris Lessing, born in Kermanshah, Iran, 1919, grew up in southern Rhodesia on her parents' farm. She got married, she had two children, but realized that that life was not for her. And so, at the age of 30, she moved to London, leaving the husband and the two children behind. She said, "There is nothing more boring for an intelligent woman than to spend endless amounts of time with small children. I felt I wasn't the best person to bring them up. I would have ended up an alcoholic or a frustrated intellectual like my mother." Her first novel, The Grass is Singing, was published in London in the spring of 1949, and then in 1962, the book that made her famous, The Golden Notebook. Here's a poem for today by Harvey Shapiro, entitled Psalm. I am still on a rooftop in Brooklyn on your holy day. The harbor is before me, Governor's Island, the Verrazano Bridge, and the Narrows. I keep in my head what Rabbi Nachman said about the world being a narrow bridge, and that the important thing is not to be afraid. So on this day, I bless my mother and father that they be not fearful where they wander, and I ask you to bless them. And before you close your book of life, your Sefer HaChaim, remember that I always praised your world and your splendor, and that my tongue tried to say your name on Court Street in Brooklyn. Take me safely through the narrows to the sea. Harvey Shapiro's poem, Psalm, from A Momentary Glory, published by Wesleyan Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for programming on this station is provided by Dennis Egan, candidate for the Alaska State Senate in Juneau, Skagway, Haines, Gustavus, and Northern Southeast Alaska communities. Paid for by Dennis Egan for Senate.
It's 3:20 p.m., and we're continuing with the Juneau Afternoon. My next guests are Heather Hardcastle and John Morris. They are here to talk about the Transboundary Rivers Forum, which is going to take place on Friday, this Friday at Centennial Hall. Welcome both of you to the show.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Transboundary Rivers Forum. What exactly are we talking about the rivers for? What's the issue at the other end of the rivers that's affecting us? I know what it is, but go ahead and tell them, John.
Thank you. From Ketchikan to Skagway, all along the Canadian border, had been surveyed, gridded out, and all prepared for permits for deep mining. We have great concerns over the Unic River, the Stikine, as well as the Taku River, and I found out yesterday we're also going to include the Elsek River that empties into Yakutat. So we're trying to get all the federally recognized tribes from Southeast Alaska to get themselves involved with this because we have great, great concerns over the mining industry that's going on in British Columbia.
All right. I know from looking online here that they've got several operations planned, and they don't necessarily have a large process for gaining approval like we do in the United States. Is that right?
Yes. We have learned that the Canadian government has very relaxed environmental regulations, and that we have great concerns over that because of the recent spill of the Mount Polly. And so we are having taken a good look at what's going on there, as well as contacting the tribal governments from British Columbia, the Yukon, the Tahltan Nation, First Nations, and making them well aware of what's going on with the mining industry that puts great concerns over our salmon industry here in Southeast.
All right, John, what kind of mining operations are we talking about? What are they specifically going after? Is it gold, or are we looking for a few other things?
They're looking at gold and silver, and I don't have a list of everything, but it's...
There's a lot of heavier metals involved,
yes,
is what it is.
Yes. I've been all over Southeast on this matter, down to Ketchikan, Klawock, Craig, Heidelberg, Petersburg, Sitka, and all the tribes from Southeast have really great concerns over this, especially after that Mount Polly spill that happened here recently. And to even try to imagine what would happen to any of our rivers that produce all the salmon that we have here in Southeast.
Okay, what can we do since we are actually dealing internationally with another country?
We are trying to get to Washington, D.C. to speak with our representatives, as well as inviting them to some of our conferences to sit in and listen to and educate everybody that we can. You know, United Fishermen of Alaska, Trout Unlimited, Ducks Unlimited, just about everybody we can get involved. I got a call yesterday from another representative from the Grand Camp, ANSANB, which have a powerful voice in a lot of things that go on here in Southeast. So we're now getting their backing also.
All right. Does the Environmental Protection Agency have any jurisdiction in this at all? Considering, you know, it's kind of like what you do upstream kind of comes downstream, and we're the ones that are downstream.
Right. We are working with EPA. We also work with the Clean Water Coordinator, Guy Archibald. We're also working with Rivers Without Borders, Chris Zimmer, as well as a few other agencies that can give us a hand in dealing with this situation that we're facing right now. We have contacted the First Nations in British Columbia. We've also been in contact with the Tahltan Nation in Canada. They paid us a visit here, I think, in June, and they were surprised at the concerns that we have because KSM, does not inform the citizens in Canada of the great dangers environmental-wise that's going to happen if the same thing happened at Mount Pauley.
Right. So we have natives in British Columbia that will also be impacted by this. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. We also had a presentation from Wade Davis that came down with tribal leaders, and he gave a great presentation to us. He had great concerns over what's going to happen, you know, with the mining industry, and just we've contacted just about everybody we can get on board to help us with these concerns.
All right, Heather, how effective can our voices be, and what's going to happen at the forum?
Yeah, so John gave a good picture of the diverse group of people that are engaged on the issue so far, and the intent of the forum on Friday here in Juneau that's going to also be repeated in Wrangell and Petersburg, Sitka, and Ketchikan next week is to educate people in this region, number one, about the threat across the border and the sheer number and size of these golden copper open pit mines, but also how we can act as a unified voice and the power in that. And you had asked a little bit about what kind of jurisdiction do we have in this country to face or to somehow have a voice in what is developed across the border. And the answer is we don't have a whole lot right now. And that is the fear, I think, that we commercial fishermen like myself, environmental groups, tribes, citizens here in Alaska, I think, share that currently if there was to be a disaster like the one that John mentioned at Mount Pauley Mine in central British Columbia that has probably irreparably affected the Fraser River watershed in B.C., if that were to happen, we currently don't have a say or any recourse, really, to somehow mitigate that ahead of time. And so at Friday's forum and also in communities next week, we are going to have John Morris give his perspectives as a tribal leader that's been involved with this issue for a very long time, as he mentioned. We'll also have Dr. Dave Chambers of the Center for Science and Public Participation. He's a geophysicist, and he can give us sort of a mining 101 discussion. Sarah O'Neill, a salmon ecologist, who's associate director of fisheries research and consulting, is going to speak to the impacts of mining on salmon. And then those of us who are engaged in a campaign that we call Salmon Beyond Borders, will give a presentation that will inform folks of how they can get involved. And by getting involved, we mean bringing our concerns straight to the State Department and to our congressional delegation, as John mentioned. And thus far, our congressional delegation, as well as several municipalities here in Southeast and the Juneau legislative delegation, have all called on the State Department for international action under the Boundary Waters Treaty. And what we are going to ask citizens to do is to join that effort and raise the flag even higher and put pressure on the State Department to engage with Canadian counterparts.
Well, I know from researching the topic is there's a group of over 36 Canadian and U.S. scientists that have been warning of some of the environmental consequences for these development projects that are going to be taking place in British Columbia. Let me quote a little bit out of here. If you guys don't know
Thank
it, I've got
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
The scale and intensity of proposed development certainly will fragment the watershed, roads, transmission lines, river diversion projects, and open pit mines. Habitat for salmon and other wildlife will be destroyed at the development sites. Cumulative impacts likely will cascade through the watersheds in the form of altered flow and temperature patterns, disturbance to wildlife interacting with roads, and reduced water quality associated with sedimentation and acid mine drainage.
Yeah.
You both are shaking your heads yes, like, hey, this yeah. is really the crux of the matter here. This is what's going on.
Yeah, it really is terrifying. It feels like what I call a freight train coming at us, and we're kind of behind here. It's coming so quickly at us because British Columbia is really on kind of a rampant push to explore and develop all this mineral.
Well, they're seeing the dollar signs that
sure.
are showing up, plus, you know, the addition for their infrastructure and, you know, how that's going to pay for that.
Yeah, and
since there's a lot of Western British Columbia that, you know, like over here, really isn't developed.
Yeah, no, exactly. Really, it's kind of the middle of nowhere, it can feel, on that side of the border, whereas we have a good 70, 75,000 people on this side that have made our living, made our lives for really thousands of years in the case of tribes. On these major salmon-producing rivers. So the discussion that we'd like to have with the whole region here in Southeast Alaska is we need to get on board, be unified, and ask for our government to stick up for us and come up with a mechanism by which we can be brought to the table and have a say in how shared watersheds with the U.S. and Canada can be jointly managed. So we at least have a seat at the table. Right now, we don't have that.
Okay. Do we know how this works in the lower 48, like, say, Montana or North Dakota, how they deal with, you know, being downstream, so to speak, from, you know, rivers in Canada? What do they do if they've got something like this that comes up? I mean, granted, it's probably not going to be something to the extent we're looking at, but just as far as, you know, any modifications to the current system where you change the flow of a river or you dam it or whatever. How do those states deal with those issues? Do we know?
Well, that's a really good question, and maybe John can fill in here too, but I do know that Montana is, and the Flathead River is one good precedent for us. In the early 1980s, both citizens on the British Columbia side and on the Montana side came to the State Department here in the U.S. and the Department of Foreign Affairs in Canada and said, will you please refer this to the International Joint Commission, which is set up under the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909, and ask the International Joint Commission to review the situation on the Flathead River and make recommendations for whether projects can continue upstream and not have ramifications downstream. And ultimately, in 1988, the International Joint Commission ruled that you could not develop the project as proposed. It was a coal mine, in that case, in British Columbia. But they recommended that that project not go through as proposed. And to my knowledge, it's never been developed. So really, that's our best-case scenario right now, is we're asking for the State Department to refer the issue of the Taku, the Stikine, and the Unik River mineral development to the International Joint Commission, which is made up of Canadian and U.S. commissioners, and review the situation here.
All right, Heather, and let's remind everybody when and where the Rivers Forum is going to take place.
Yes, the most important part. So please come down to Centennial Hall at 6 o'clock on Friday, this Friday, October 24th, and we'll be in Ballroom 3.
All right, and John, did you have anything else to add?
Not at this moment, thank you.
Okay, well, Heather Hardcastle, John Morris, thank you very much for being our guests on the show with a very important topic.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks to everyone for coming out on Friday.
Great.
This is Bird Note. If birding destinations on the continent were put to a vote, Cape May, New Jersey, would without question fly among the most famous. And many think October is the most exciting month of all to watch birds at Cape May, including migrating hawks. Cape May lies at the southernmost tip of New Jersey, on a thumb-shaped peninsula that divides Delaware Bay from the Atlantic Ocean. Because most birds prefer to migrate over land rather than open water, the peninsula funnels southbound birds, sometimes in astonishing numbers. Between September and November 2010, the Cape May Bird Observatory counted more than 47,000 migrating hawks. Some Octobers see more than 20,000 hawks passing through in a single day. New Jersey Audubon sponsors the Cape May Autumn Birding Festival. The event offers a unique opportunity to brush elbows and binoculars with prominent birders, and to learn firsthand about bird migration at one of its most celebrated points of passage. This year's festival runs from the 24th to 26th of October, and coincides with the migration of shorebirds, waterfowl, warblers, and, of course, raptors. You can learn more about Cape May and other top birding spots in the country on our website, birdnote.org. Writers for BirdNote include Bob Sundstrom, Dennis Paulson, Ellen Blackstone, Francis Wood, and Todd Peterson. I'm Michael Stein.
Support for programming on KTOO comes from George McGuan, candidate for House of Representatives in District 34 from Sunny Point to Berners Bay. Paid for by McGuan for State House.
All right. Juno Afternoon continues. It's 3:37 p.m. I'm Ken Fix. I'm your host, and I'm filling in for Joan Pardis today. My next guests are probably the youngest ones that I've had for the studio here, and they are from the Charter School 8th graders. They're running a fall carnival this Friday as a fundraiser for a trip this spring going to Denali and Fairbanks. And I'd like to let them introduce themselves, starting over here on my far left. And who are you?
I'm Xander.
Okay. Hi, Xander.
I'm Lily.
Hi, Lily.
I'm Reed.
All right. Nice to meet all of you. All right. Let's talk a little bit about your fundraiser.
Well, it's on Saturday, on the 25th, and you can come around like 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, I guess. There's gonna be lots of activities and stuff.
All right, Xander, you said Saturday. Is it really Friday?
No, it's Saturday.
It's Saturday.
Okay.
And it's a carnival. Fall carnival. It's a fundraiser, so we can go to Denali. We all the eighth graders raise money, so we kind of want to raise the money ourselves. So we feel like it's kind of our trip.
All right. And let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you're going to have at the carnival. Do we have any specific activities that you've got lined up?
Yeah. Well, we have the Donut Dangle, which is a lot of fun.
That's where you have a donut on a string, and one person's operating it, and you try to catch the donut with no hands.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We also have candy fishing, where you, like, throw your fishing pole over and try to catch a piece of candy.
We're going to have a cupcake walk where there's music and you kind of walk around, and when the music stops, they call out a number, and if you're standing on that number, you get a cupcake.
There's also going to be sort of carnival-ish games, games and crafts, which I don't think are specified. But there's also going to be a bake sale.
Okay.
And we're going to be selling some stuff. One thing I'd like to add is that the price is $5 to enter, including the first 10 tickets, and then 50 cents for each additional ticket. Tickets will be used to get into the ticket involving activities ish. There's some free ones.
All right.
So like certain free ones are going to be like a lot of the crafts are probably going to be free, and I think there's going to be a dance revolution thing on the Wii, and that's going to be free. You can buy lunch there. We're going to have like hot dogs. And it's going to go from 12 to 3
o'clock. Okay. I guess this one's for Lily. What are you looking forward to seeing in Denali and Fairbanks?
Well, I'm really excited to go to the permafrost caves. And that's like these caves where there's actually some like mammoth bones and stuff like that being defrosted out of the ice right now. And I'm really excited to see that. Also, we're going to the Denali Park, so we're going to go see up there, and there's lots of cool animals and stuff like that. I'm also really interested in, we're going to the Ice Museum. It's going to be cool.
Okay. So. Yeah, I've been to Denali before, and it was like we saw every single animal, my wife and I, except for a moose. And we were there for 2 days, and on the last day, we were like, man, I just can't believe we didn't even see a moose. And as we're leaving the park, there's a moose standing right at the Welcome to Denali sign munching on some leaves. So nice. It was pretty cool.
That's going to be fun. We're also going to do we're going to go to the hot springs, do some stuff.
The Chena hot springs.
See the hydroponic gardens and stuff like that.
And we're going to go to the ice museum, look at some stuff there.
Yeah, I think there's like an ice bar there that's has like glowing lights shining through the ice, and all the silverware and all the plates and stuff are all made out of ice.
Heard that's a really cool place.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun.
Okay, I was just kidding. That's a pun in there. Okay, nobody laughed. All right, and how long is your trip going to be? Yeah, a really cool place. Okay, everybody caught on now. All right. And how long is your trip going to be?
Well, it's going to be somewhere in May.
It's a week long.
Oh, it's a week long
Saturday,
trip. Okay,
Saturday,
great.
Yeah, sixth and seventh graders get a week without us.
Okay, is this your first fundraising event for the trip, or
no.
Is this going to be it?
Well, we did a garage sale before.
Mm-hmm. We did two garage sales.
We did two garage sales.
And then we have some
on at Centennial
a booth at the public market this coming up soon, and we're hopefully going to have some other.
We're probably going to do some more bake sales.
Yeah, and we're actually having a dinner that hasn't been exactly planned when it's going to happen, but
like
there's
going to
be a Mexican dinner happening sometime during the year. So we're going to have fundraising events throughout the whole year.
In past years, we've had like a lemonade sale. I'm not sure if we're going to do that again, but it's usually a little later on into the year.
Okay. Well, you're well on your way then. How much money have you raised so far?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
About a little over $500. I think actually more closer to $600 right now.
Yeah, how much did we make at that?
We made $481 at our the community garage sale, and then
we made another $200.
So yeah, we're about we're like $681 now.
Okay.
Hopefully after the fall carnival, we'll have at least another $100.
All right, Reen. And how much is it going to cost for all the ones that are going to actually go? What's the cost per person? Do you know?
$5 for 10 tickets to get in.
Oh, this is for the carnival.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was talking about the trip once you take it up to Denali and Fairbanks.
Yeah.
We don't really know the exact price, but we have to get everyone plane tickets and all the activities. And we're actually staying at the school, so I think that doesn't cost anything.
Going to be doing a lot of stuff. We're going to be shopping for our own food and cooking our own meals. and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the fundraisers, the fundraisers money, all the funds that we make are also going to go towards food and like renting a car and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're renting.
All right. Well, I sure wish all of you good luck with the carnival coming up this Saturday.
All right.
And where is it going to be?
It's going to be at the, it's going to be in the Juneau Community Charter School on the second floor, the middle school floor. And it's mostly going to be in the...
It'll just be upstairs.
Yeah.
It'll basically be in all the rooms.
Yeah.
Okay. So. And what time is it going to start?
It's going to start at 12 o'clock, and it's going to end at 3 p.m.
All right. Well, anybody want to add anything else?
It might 3 o'clock. That's kind of including some cleanup time also. So.
All right. Okay, Xander, Lily, Reed. I wish you all the best of luck with your fall carnival coming up this Saturday.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on the show with me.
Thank you for having us.
Riding along on a carousel, trying to catch up to you. Riding along on a carousel, will I catch up to you? Horses chasing, 'cause they're racing, so neat so far. On a carousel, on a carousel, nearer, nearer by changing horses, still so far away. People fighting for
station is provided by Dennis Egan, candidate for the Alaska State Senate in Juneau, Skagway, Haines, Gustavus, and Northern Southeast Alaska communities. Paid for by Dennis Egan for Senate.
Okay, now here comes the real part of the fun in the show here. It's 3:48 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. And my next guests are two of the Juneau Roller Derby girls.
Woo-hoo.
And it's Stephanie Cruz and Kara Nelson. Welcome both of you to the show.
Thank you.
I love having the Roller Girls on the show, and sometimes I miss you, but I've gotten to interview you a couple of times now. All right, let's talk a little bit about the event that's coming up here.
So this weekend, Saturday, October 25th,
we will be hosting a Nightmare on Egan Street. It's a mashup game between Juno Roller Girls, Boomtown Roller Girls, and Yukon Roller Girls. So we're mixing up and dividing evenly amongst the teams to have a awesome four fun bout this weekend. Let's see, doors open at 6:15 and wheels roll at 7. Tickets are on sale now. You can get them at the Jack, at Hearthside Books, or online on the Jack website.
All right, and Stephanie, you go by the your handle is Titan, so I'll use that for a little bit here.
Thank you.
All right, and Titan, is this what we would more or less categorize as a scrimmage?
Kind of. So it's an official bout. We have our uniforms, and we have and we're keeping score, we're keeping track of everything, but it's not for rankings or anything. Right. So You'll see a lot of love between the teams out on the track. Although we don't pull any punches for a game like this, we still go all out.
Yeah, all right. Definitely. And there's still timed halves in the regulation.
Yeah, it's a regulation game. It doesn't count for any standings.
All right. And Kara, you go by Scara Unitely, so I'll just call you Scara.
All right.
All right. And there is a portion of this event that's going to an important charity, and
yes.
Let's tell everybody what that is.
That is Haven House, and it's a home that's opening here in Juneau for women coming out of prison. So we're pretty excited to do that.
The mission for Haven House is to assist in rehabilitation and immersion back into the rest of society. It's really important to have a supportive community during that transitional period, and it's something that's really close to Juno Roller Girls' hearts, as we know people who've been through similar situations.
No doubt. And let's talk about fresh meat. How many new girls are coming in this season?
Well, we actually have an introduction to skating class that started through the Juno schools about 2 weeks ago, as well as a Derby 101 class, which is amazing. I wish I would have done that when I started.
You were just thrown to the wolves, weren't you?
Yeah, I couldn't even stand up on skates, and they graciously encouraged me through. That's what I love, my girls.
I think there's about between 12 and 15 skaters in the classes.
Mm-hmm.
We're really excited to see them. Some of them are returning skaters who've been in our introduction classes before. And who are more recreational skaters, but there's quite a few who are interested in becoming full-blown Juno Roller Girls,
yes.
And you'll see them out on one of our bout days soon. They're very motivated and, from what we've seen, very talented, so we're excited.
All right, now Boomtown is from Wasilla. Where do the Yukon Roller Girls come from?
From Whitehorse.
Okay, they're all at Whitehorse. All right, that would figure.
They're old friends.
I hear there's just a little bit of evil in your voice.
We
there,
love them.
Scara.
No, okay. We have a great time. We had a great seasons with them.
I say if we had to pick a sister league, we wound up bouting against Yukon early in our careers and really hit it off with them as a group of ladies. So there's really strong friendships between us and the Yukon Roller Girls. We're really excited to host them.
Yeah.
All right. And this is just the beginning of the season. How many more bouts are going to be coming up throughout the course of your season?
We're planning on 4 total home bouts, and then our away bouts are still being determined. We're hoping to participate in a tournament in February, as well as hosting a home bout in February. Tournament will be down in the Western Washington area. And then there's also the All-Alaska State Tournament.
Woo-hoo,
in
champs.
May. We will be coming back as the winners of last year's tournament, so we're planning on doing well this season, but only time will tell.
All right, and let's highlight again where the tickets are available and when the event takes place.
All right. Doors open at 6:15 on Saturday at Centennial Hall. You can get tickets at Hearthside Books, at the Jack, online on jhc.org, and you can get them at the door. However, if you wait that long, you might get turn out being out of luck. We have one new thing that our merchandise group is asking me to highlight at this radio spot. We will be offering some concessions during the bout, so there'll be some snacks and drinks aside from the alcoholic beverages that our sponsor so graciously helps provide for us.
Okay, well, Titan and Scara, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you.
And like I do all the time when I have Roller Girls on the show, I play the Dire Straits Skate Away song.
All right.
Down a wrong way. Like a urban toreador, I share wheels on and feet. The cars do the usual dances, same old cruise in the curbside crawl. But the roller girl, she's taking chances. I just love to see her take them all. No fear, alone at night, she's sailing through the crowd. Enemies, his bones are tight and playing loud. Hallelujah, here she comes, Queen Rollerball. And enchanté, what can I say? Care at all? You know, she used to have to wait around. She used to be the lonely one. But now that she can skate around town, she's the only, only one. No fear, alone at night, she's sailing to the crowd. In her ears, his bones are tight and the music's playing loud. She gets rock and roll in a rock and roll station, in a rock and roll.
That's Dire Straits with Skate Away. I always play that for our roller girls. It's 3:58 p.m. and a Juno afternoon will continue right after this.
This is Count Dracula. I heard the stations are looking for some new blood, which always interests me. People who want to have a stake, but not a wooden stake, in the heart of public radio in the capital city. I usually like people to make a donation after midnight, but you can show your support any time at ktoo.org. People are dying to donate. I should know. I have done it dozens of times.
Just a lead up to Halloween here. It's 3:59 p.m. now, and tonight's forecast is calling for rain showers likely in the evening, with lows in the upper 30s to low 40s, southeast winds at 10 miles an hour, increasing to 15 overnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with scattered rain showers and highs around 47 with southeast winds at 10 to 15. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, digital channel 871. We are also online on KTOO.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. I'm Ken Fix. I was filling in for Joan Partis today, and I'll see you again next Tuesday on a Juneau afternoon. Take care, everybody. All Things Considered is coming right up.
All available and necessary resources were activated and deployed immediately when we became aware of the incident.
This morning, shooting in Canada's capital. A Canadian soldier and a gunman were killed.
Today is Wednesday, October 22nd, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.